Hello, my name is Hannah Tannenbaum. Welcome to Torah Timecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. Today, we will be studying Parshat Vayishlach. In this week's Parsha, we read the story of Yaakov and Esav's reunion. After many years of separation, Yaakov hears that his brother is on his way to meet him with 400 armed men. Yaakov decides to do three things. He divides his camp into two separate groups, he prays to Hashem for help, and he sends servants to deliver gifts to Esav. That night, Yaakov is attacked by a mysterious stranger, who he fights with. He refuses to let the stranger go until he is given a blessing. Instead, the stranger gives Yaakov a new name, Israel. The next day, the two brothers meet and hug. Yaakov arrives in Shechem and purchases it, where his daughter is subsequently attacked. The parsha ends with the death of Yitzchak and a list of all the descendants of Esav. The story of the capture and rape of Dinah in Bereishit 34, is troubling to say the least. The reaction of her brothers compounds the situation when they deceive the people of Shechem, then kill Dinah's captors along with the entire city, and plunder the spoils beyond that. It is not surprising that biblical commentators have questioned the moral fiber of Yaakov's sons, and even condemned them for it. Rape is a crime that does not require a capital punishment. What about the whole innocent population? Murder is wrong. Deception is wrong. The Ramban, who died in 1270 in Akko, says that the brothers violated their commitment to the people that had caused them no harm, which subsequently causes a desecration of God's name. Other commentators have, however, justified and even praised the brothers' actions, though that seems shocking. While it is easy to understand how the killings are morally reprehensible, there are those who do condone it. Ar HaChaim, who died in 1743 in Jerusalem, suggests that the brothers had no other way to retrieve Dinah from Shechem, given an understanding that the townspeople would have rallied to protect their leader. According to this interpretation, Shimon Levi were acting violently, yes, but their violent act was one of self-defense. The Abarbanel, who died in Venice in 1508, suggests that the entire town was complicit with the kidnapping and the rape, perhaps even taking part in the abuse, to the extent there was also no untainted court of law to adjudicate the case. The Rambam, who died in Egypt in 1204, holds that individuals are responsible for injustices that occur in their cities, and therefore the people were deserving of their fate. According to Haktav VaHaKabbalah, Rev Yaakov Tzvi Meckelberg, who died in 1865 in Germany, the condition had been made that the circumcision include the rejection of idolatry. After going through the Brit Milah, though, the people of Shechem regretted changing their faith, so they planned to kill Yaakov and his sons in a show of loyalty to their original beliefs. If so, the massacre may be understood as either a punishment or as a preemptive strike to ensure that the townspeople would not take revenge on Dinah's brothers the moment they rescued her. But Yaakov, the patriarch, admonishes the brothers and his sons and declares that their brutality endanger their entire family. Bereishit 34:30, Ve'achartem oti la'avisheni bi'oshev ha'aretz. You have brought trouble on me, making me odious among the inhabitants of the land. My men are few in number, so that if they unite against me and attack me, I and my house will be destroyed. Ve'nishmadati ani ubeiti. Yaakov notably appears to be more concerned with the fear of retaliation than he is with the moral question, but he distances himself from them with his rebuke, even many years later on his deathbed, when he curses their anger. Shimon v'Levi achim, klei chamas michoratehem, b'sodam al tavo nafshi, u'bekalam al techad kvodi. Bereishit 49:5-7. Shimon and Levi are a pair. Their weapons are tools of lawlessness. Let not my person be included in their council. Let not my being be counted in their assembly. For when angry, they slay men, and when pleased, they maim oxen. Cursed be their anger so fierce, and their wrath so relentless. I will divide them in Yaakov and scatter them in Israel. Yet, the Torah usually indicates displeasure by either explicit condemnation or through a punishment, neither of which occurs here. Furthermore, both Shimon and Levi retain their status as tribes, with Levi becoming the chosen one of God, with priests and spiritual leaders as descendants, and Shimon's offspring become the teachers of future generations. The commentators grapple with this ambiguity in their efforts to make sense of the biblical narrative. Targum Yonatan, who apparently was edited in Bavel at the end of the 7th century, example, contends that the rape of Dinah was so terrible that that's what warranted the response by her family. Had there been no reaction at all, even future readers would have had trouble by her family's lack of response. Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, who died in 1888 in Germany, takes this idea a step further. He argues that Shechem chose Dinah because he believed that nobody would care to defend her. Nobody would come from Yaakov's camp, and his act would have no repercussions for him. This arrogant cruelty, therefore, is what influenced Dinah's brothers. Were they to remain passive, Shechem and his ilk might have taken even more liberties with the girls and women of Yaakov's camp. The brothers could not risk that outcome. Another commentator, Rav David Zvi Hoffman, who died in 1921 in Berlin, explains that Yaakov's sons had set out to defend the dignity of their father's household, and they were willing to kill or be killed to ensure the terrible disgrace of their sister's rape did not stand. Their moral stance, according to this view, is understandable. Given that these rationale for the brothers' violence are potentially disturbing, and the implications, and for that matter, the practical applications of the approach demand consideration. Several events of the modern era seem to attest to the truth of this stream of thought. The Rev Soloveitchik, who died in 1993 in Boston, in his famous essay Kol Dodi Dofek, The Voice of My Beloved Knox, describes how, in contemporary times, God figuratively knocked on the door of the Jewish people to indicate his return from a long exile. Rabbi Soloveitchik observes unapologetically that the Jewish nation has a moral right and a responsibility to defend itself. And the Rav argues, and I quote, "Revenge is forbidden when it serves no purpose. However, if by taking revenge we raise ourselves up to the plane of self-defense, then it becomes the elementary right of man qua man to avenge the wrongs inflicted upon him. And for the first time in the history of our exile, divine providence has surprised our enemies with the sensational discovery that Jewish blood is not free for taking. It is not hefker." End quote. The readiness of the state of Israel to unleash its armies against its enemies is the surest and most effective deterrent to the renewal of the venomous type of anti-Semitism which declares open season on Jewish blood. Isn't this the position of Shimon and Levi so many years earlier? If we don't defend ourselves, who will? Thus, the Jewish nation has the moral responsibility and right to defend itself regardless of the world's condemnation, if it comes. Shaul Chernikovsky, who wrote in Tel Aviv in 1936, applies the strength of Shimon and Levi to the not yet Israeli pioneers. He rewrites Yaakov's assessment of the incident as found in the blessing to his sons at the end of his life. Chernikovsky recasts the curse in Yaakov's words as blessing. Shimon and Levi are brothers. Noble is their sword. Blessed be their anger, for it is strong. May there be many like them in Israel and all of the diaspora. May God bless their might and be happy with their actions. Where Yaakov seemed to want to reduce the show of physical strength, Chernakovsky seems to want more of them. But even Yaakov's original words entrenched the strength of Shimon and Levi amongst the Jewish people, giving the dispersal of these two tribes. For Shimon, remember, was divided in the land, and Levi didn't even get a portion, but lived amongst all the other tribes. On the one hand, their zeal is thereby diluted among the other tribes. But on the other, as the Netziv, Naftali Tzvi Yehuda Berlin, posits, that by dispersing the descendants of Shimon and Levi among the other tribes, it means that each locale is populated by at least some Jews who have the courage and ability to stand up and be counted if the need arise. In truth, there is no need for all these explanations because the answer appears in the text itself. When Shimon and Levi brazenly respond to their father, "Hakezona ya'aseh et achotenu? Shall we allow our sister to be a harlot?" 34:31. And with this, the story ends. Perhaps Yaakov and his sons disagree fundamentally. Recall that Yaakov's own brother had sought Yaakov in his wrath. Did that experience drive the father's commitment to show restraint, to be the ambassador of peace? His sons instead pursued action to prevent the debasement of the family, indeed the fledgling nation. They perceived bold and violent steps to be required, and indeed their preemptive strike reminded all that their group of people should not be trifled with. For Shimon and Levi, it was a time of war. They acted on the courage of their conviction that right should triumph. In history, others have done the same. President Truman, in his decision to drop the atomic bomb, thereby ending the carnage of World War II, or in the early days of the State of Israel, when Ariel Sharon led the retaliatory attacks on Arab settlements by his legendary Brigade 101, which quickly quelled the deadly Arab mortars. For all of these instances wrought devastation for some, the motive for them was not the offense of conquest or vengeance, but defense, deterrence, and lasting peace. Shimon and Levi saw their killing acts as necessary in order to prevent future atrocities. For them, anything less, a more moderate response, would have meant tolerating Shechem turning their sister Dinah into a harlot and a perpetual victim. Thank you for studying with me Parshat Vayishlach. And now for the thought question. Perhaps all that we have suggested was true years ago, and even maybe up to 70 years ago. But does it still apply today?